Good evening. The talk will be about InitIDE and performance improvements, and it will be a more generic talk, and these improvements could be implemented in all the different InitIDE implementations. Maybe not MKOSI InitIDE, but most others probably. First, I will introduce myself. Then I will give a quick introduction of what is InitIDE, so that you can all follow the talk. Then I will talk about what to optimize for, and then I will present the different optimizations. First, the optimization for the compression, then improving the speed for listing and extracting the InitIDEs, and then what could be done in the future if I have enough time in the talk and also in the future. First, a few words about me. I'm Benjamin Drung. I discovered free and open source software during my university, and I got hooked, so I decided to leave the ugly Windows world and go to the new shiny free and open source software world, and became quickly Ubuntu developer and also Debian developer. Since 2.5 years, I've been working for Canonical in the Ubuntu Foundations team, making sure that the foundation of the Ubuntu operating system is stable and up to date, or breaks, depending on how good you are. And if you want to talk to me afterwards, look for the guy in the red shirt. So, and if you miss me today, you can maybe, if we meet next time, just look for the dude in the red shirt again. So let's start. What is an InitIDE? Who knows what an InitIDE is? Please raise your hand. So most people raised your hand. So let's only do a quick look at that. An InitIDE is a CPU archive, or it could be multiple CPU archives concatenated together. And CPU archives are similar to tarballs. They just contain some files. And these CPU archives could be compressed, depending on, it could use different compression algorithms depending on what the kernel supports. And they are used during boot process. Looking at the boot process, if you power on your machine, then the boot firmware loads, normally UEFI, then the bootloader like systemd boot, grub, or whatever, and then you load the kernel InitID and command line, or what people do here in the conference, they use UKIIs, which contain all these three, and the kernel loads the InitID, extracts it, and then runs a slash init inside, and the InitID tries to figure out what's the root device, tries to mount that, and hand over the control to the PID1 of the your root file system. Then, about building InitIDEs, normally the tools copy the files that they want to have in the InitID into a temporary directory, and that's the part where all the most of the time is spent, because it's not easy, as we heard in the previous talk as well. And when everything is there, then you create an CPU archive out of it, and maybe you compress it at the end. So let's dive into the details. If you want to optimize, you can try to optimize in different directions. For example, you can try to improve the boot speed, that the system boots faster, because then you have to wait less time. Or you can try to optimize the on-disk size of the InitID. That will help people that decided to have a smaller ESP partition 10 years ago and now they run out of space. Or you can try to optimize the creation speed so that you don't have to wait so long if you update a new kernel. Or you can try to optimize the memory consumption either during boot and also during creation time. But there's a problem. Often if you try to optimize, you can't optimize all the four targets. Sometimes they are conflicting, especially if you want to reduce the size of the InitID. You can take a better compression algorithm or higher compression levels, but they take longer time and also often needs more memory. So if you set default settings for your InitID, it depends on your hardware that you run on it, if it's a good choice or a bad choice. For example, if you use Z standard with the highest compression level, minus 19. That can take very long. We had a bug report that took over an hour on NISA boards, which is a small RISC-V development machine. So that's not a time that you want to wait if you've just updated the kernel. But the even bigger problem is if you have a high compression level, if your device doesn't have enough memory, you can run out of memory, and then you are screwed. Hello, Raspberry Pis. So we had multiple discussions in Ubuntu several years ago, and we settled on using C standard minus one as default, so that we don't run out of memory on low memory devices and also don't take too long on these not powerful machines, but still get a relative decent compression ratio. So let's talk about what we did in Ubuntu to optimize the compression. The idea is compressing the initID on the user's machine cannot use the high compression levels, so why not do it outside of the user's machine? We had multiple iterations for that, and the final approach was as followed. First, let's explain what the overall compression life cycle is for a kernel model. If we build a new kernel on the build machine, we build the kernel and all the models, then we put all the models in a Debian package. That Debian package is then compressed with Z standard, shipped to the customer. The user downloads the kernel model, and when you install the kernel model package, then the package is extracted and all the kernel models are placed on the file system decompressed. If the user then creates an initID, this initID copies the kernel modules, puts them in a CPU archive, and then compresses the CPU archive again. And when the system boots, the kernel decompresses the CPU archive and runs the boot process. So we have compression, decompression, compression, decompression. And the solution is, let's rip out one step of decompression and compression. So nowadays, since Ubuntu 23.10, we compress the kernel modules during package build. There we can use the highest compression level and ship these compressed kernel modules in a Debian package where we don't compress anymore, because compressing compressed files is a step too much. If a user installs the kernel modules, these will stay compressed on the file system. And if we put them in an initID, we put these files in a separate CPU archive that we don't compress anymore. So the initID consists of two files now, or two concatenated CPU archives. The first one contains all the compressed files, and the second part contains the rest, and only we compress the rest of the files that we need. And then the benefit is, if we boot the system, the kernel doesn't have to decompress the kernel modules, because it just reads the CPU, the first uncompressed CPU archives into memory, and only the kernel modules that are actually needed for booting are loaded by the kernel and then decompressed on the fly. The result of that is that we need half the disk space on a regular installation. We need three times less peak memory, because during boot we don't need to decompress all files, but only the kernel modules that are actually loaded. The initID generation is faster. I don't have exact numbers for that, because we did other improvements, like stealing some code from Draycut to make it faster. So with all the other combinations, it was 2.5 times faster on a regular installation. And we got faster boot speeds on systems that had processors that were slow, where the compression difference was noticeable. If you have a fast desktop machine, it doesn't matter if you have Z standard compressed files or not. It's too fast to notice. But on small, slow ones like the Vision 5 2 board, I noticed 10 seconds boot speed improvement, which is 20% of the, nearly 20% of the boot time it had. The only downside is that the kernel package is a little bit bigger because if you compress all the uncompressed kernel modules together, you can benefit of saving space by utilizing the similarity between the kernel modules. But if you just compress each individual kernel module separately, you don't benefit from the cross models similarities. The next thing to optimize was that I noticed after the change, we had now not an initd where we had more or less one big CPU archive that was compressed, but a big CPU archive followed by a compressed one. And the somehow the tools for listing the content of the initrd and also for extracting the initrd was much slower than before. The tools that we use in Debian and Ubuntu are called lsinitramfs for listing and unmkinitramfs for extracting. And these are shell scripts that do some logic to figure out where the boundaries are between these CPU archives. And this shell logic is quite slow, so that could be optimized. Back at the time, I had a long wish to learn Rust. So I thought that would be a good idea to actually learn Rust and do something useful that is not done by anyone else yet, and something that could be used later on as well. So I thought, how hard could it be to implement? Surprise, it wasn't hard. So here comes it. Thanks to a colleague, it's called 3CPIO. It's a tool for handling CPIO faults for initrds especially. So it can handle initrds with multiple CPIOs. And the goal is to make it the fastest implementation that we have on the planet. To my measurements, it's the fastest. If you find something that is faster on a certain area, then please let me know and let's try to make it the fastest. It's compared to the lsinitramfs, it's what I measured up to 274 times faster. So lsinitramfs took 15 seconds on my desktop machine and afterwards it took maybe 20 milliseconds. That's the bottleneck of the slow shell scripting that we had before. And it's also faster in decompressing. Archboot looked at it and picked it up and use it now for their live systems. And they noticed it's 25% faster on their machines. So let's look at the future. I have big plans for 3CPIO. I like to add creation support that's currently work in progress. So with that, it could be replace all the cases where you can, where you currently use CPIO. And the further improvement would be to change the initrd generation tools to not create intermediate temporary directories. So that when you create the initrd, you just collect the information which files do I want to have in the initrd, and then call 3CPIO saying, okay, I want to have that file in that place in the initrd and that file there, and so on, so that you don't have to copy the file multiple times, because you can just create a CPIO just from the files that you have on your file system without just having a temporary directory where you make sure that the files have the correct name and path. That's all. Questions?
Questions, many, yes.
So I didn't understand why the CPIO tooling matters at during boot. Why is it faster?
For Arch boot, they are extracting an init ID, and there they used CPIO. Now they own 3 CPIO, and that makes an improvement.
But isn't it extracted by the kernel?
I haven't looked too that much into the detail, but the Arch boot has 2 levels of booting.
Ah, okay.
So the initial init ID that is booted by the kernel is done by the kernel, but then the code inside the init ID extracts itself or some second level using 3 CPIO.
Can you specify what Arch boot is for those who don't know?
It's, as far as I've read, a live system for Arch.
This is a random one, but out of curiosity, it was surprising to me that you listed not compressed package. Like, I get why you change the package to not compress. Like, I don't know if RPM even supports that, right? Like, it's just interesting because, like, does it matter to not compress the package? Like, if you'd continue to do that, who would have noticed or cared? You know what I mean?
Okay, we could continue compressing the kernel modules package. I'm not sure if we have measured the difference. I would assume that if we do that, the difference would be marginal. And so we just say, don't compress it because it doesn't give us any benefits.
And it's very slow to build because there are many files. So it takes a lot of time to compress. And it's so much faster when you don't compress. And if you don't get anything, yeah.
How were you able to achieve such a speed boost over CPIO? Are you parallelizing the work? How are you?
So the
man.
So the big performance benefits. Let's go back. Most of that is just the reference shell logic is so slow that you can easily beat it. But if you compare 3 CPIO against CPIO itself, it's a few times faster. I haven't looked into why it's so much faster. I also compared it 3 CPIO against BSD. What's called BSD? There's a BSD variant that you can handle CPIO archives as well, and that has a similar speed as 3 CPIO. Okay. So maybe the kernel calls that we are using is different.
You mentioned the lower peak memory usage during the unpacking by the kernel, by doing this kernel modules in an uncompressed one. How do you even measure the memory usage at that early stage in the boot?
I didn't measure the usage in the init ID boot phase. We just measure if you extract the init ID, how much memory or how much size does it take? Because the kernel needs to extract the whole init ID, and that needs to reside in the memory.
Okay, so you measured it just in like a regular user space decompression, and then from there inferred that the kernel would need the same. Or
yeah. So, for example, if you the init ID, if you extract that, then a 100 megabyte init ID explodes to 700 megabytes, and if you keep the kernel models compressed, the init ID might be still 100 megabytes or 95 megabytes, but if you extract it, then the kernel model stay compressed, and then it's only 250 or 300 megabytes.
Okay.
Depending on how much you stuff into the init ID. So if you have especially NVIDIA and AMD kernel models and firmware files, then the init ID can become quite big.
How do you do the split between the compressed and uncompressed file? Is it like manually specified in Dracut or something, or probably like
So the CPIL archives have an end marker, a file called trailer, which indicates that the CPIL archive ends. And then you look if something is left after that, and if that has a the beginning of that is a normal CPIL archive, then you say, okay, it's a normal one. But if not, you will detect, okay, it's a compressed something, and you decompress the remaining bits.
Sorry, when you build it, not when you decompress it, when you build it, how do you decide? Do you manually specify, I want to have those kernel modules, those files, which are kernel modules, and want to have them in the second part of the initRMFS, or do you just let Dracut do a thing or something?
Right, so when we build it, so we create the temporary directory where we put all the files that we want, and then we run a find command over the directory, searching for all the files with Z standard or XZ extension, put all the files that we find there in an uncompressed text file, and then another find for finding all the other files that are not with that extension, put that in the compressed text file, and then say, okay, the uncompressed text file is the input for the first CPIL, and the compressed file, text file is the input for the second CPIL call.
Any other questions or comments? Last chance. No more talks after this. We have a couple of minutes.
So you have time to grab some beer. Or I can just do some buzzwording. So maybe I just should say that this talk isn't about TPM. So that
no!
That we have that.
It's my bad for accepting.
Sorry.
All right, well then, thank you very much.